just one of your many toys. You don't know. Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. The word feminist can evoke very different feelings for different people. In 2014, Time magazine faced public outcry for including it in its worst words poll, which asked readers which word they felt should be banned in 2015.
The magazine apologized for the execution of the poll, but the controversy speaks to the many mixed emotions that the word often elicits.
This controversy is at the heart of Here We Are, Feminism for the Real World. It's an anthology which features essays, conversations, and artwork from prominent feminists. Wisconsin writer Kelly Jensen is the editor and one of the contributors, and she spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about what inspired her to put the book together.
I worked as a librarian for many years and worked with teenagers especially. And one of the questions that frequently came up in my work was, what about the boys? Where are the books for boys? Where are the books, you know, that boys will enjoy reading? And this concern, I thought, was a good one, but it really bothered me that people weren't asking the opposite question. Where are the books for girls? Why was there such a focus on boys in reading and so little time given to girls in reading? So I blog in my spare time. That's what I did then at Stacked. And so I put together a series of blog posts from authors talking about girls in young adult fiction, feminism, those issues that answer the question, what about the girls, instead of what about the boys? And I loved putting this series together. I think I put it together for 4 years. I think this is going on the fifth year. And doing that, I realized there's a book in doing something like this and compiling essays about feminism, looking at it a little more broadly than just focusing on girls, of course. So I tweeted about the idea, and my editor contacted me, and the rest is history.
One of the things I found interesting about the book is it really delves into the word feminism and that kind of concept. So where does that word really come from?
There's a great essay in the book by Susanna Weiss who traces the history of the word itself rather than the movement itself. And it goes back quite a long ways. I'm not going to repeat kind of her work in it because she did such a great job outlining it. But we have, I think, for a long time looked at feminism as meaning one thing, as sort of being this girl power movement and really focused on girls. And for the most part, feminism is about gender equality. That's a big, big part of it. But my goal in putting this book together was looking at just how expansive the idea is that this one single word encompasses, that it's far more than getting girls equal rights. It's also about exploring different identities when it comes to gender, different sexualities, different body types, different abilities and disabilities, and of course looking at race and class and all those other issues that are tied up in the idea of what it means for everybody to be equal.
I think there is this idea among a lot of people that there is a kind of set dictionary definition. But what I found interesting about the piece that you just mentioned is it looks at kind of the evolution of the term. So when we look at the different waves of feminism, it has a different meaning. And it seems like it's had a different meaning, really, to many different people since its inception, as it were.
One of the things that that piece talks about is how it was such a – that it was – not a positive word for a long time. And over the course of history within feminism, it's sort of been reclaimed and reworked to sort of be a much more expansive idea than it was originally intended or used. And I think that that's a good thing. I think is we've progressed and we've talked about different ways equality works or doesn't work. We've sort of seen how it fits so nicely into this broad idea of feminism and why it is that people who identify as feminists would care about issues beyond just gender equality, because there's so many intersections that also deal with oppression that feminists are interested in, you know, solving as best as possible.
What are the biggest myths that you hear sort of propagated about feminists and feminism itself?
Oh, my favorite is that we hate men, which is not true. There is some joking about that, but it's certainly not the basis of feminism at all. The basis is equality for every single person out there. So making sure that women of color, disabled women, disabled men, people who don't identify as either male or female, that they all are on equal footing with one another. That's the biggest myth I see. And I think another myth is something that I talked a little bit about in my essay in the book about the idea that feminists are loud and that they're always out and doing things and being active. And while, yes, there are a lot of feminists who do that, that's not everything. Like, your feminism can also be quiet. It can be, you know, the little things you do in your day-to-day life that make you pause and think about issues of equality, issues of fairness, and ways that you as a person can not continue some of those things that discriminate against others.
It seems like in a lot of ways the book is written as almost, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but feminism for dummies, or the guidebook to feminism. Who is your intended audience?
So one of the things I thought about for a long time, and something that I was asked, because contributors kind of want to know how to write their piece, like what can they cover, what should they stay away from, like how intense can they go? And I said, you know, I picture the reader a 12-year-old, and having worked with, I want to call them teenagers, but they're not teenagers if they're 12. They're just about there. 12-year-olds are really interesting because some are super mature and ready to jump into the next thing. Their understanding of the world around them is really good. And there are other 12-year-olds who are still children. And that's not to put them down at all, but they're not necessarily ready to graduate into being a teenager and having those little bits of rebellion. And so I thought about that age group and how I wanted this book to be able to reach both those 12-year-olds who might think they know everything about feminism, but will find something new in there, and those 12-year-olds who maybe know nothing and need some kind of way to get in and sort of see what the conversation is all about.
What do you think we gain from reading the different ways that people came to feminism?
That was one of my favorite things about putting this together, is many of the people that I had contributed to this anthology, I knew they were feminists, but I didn't necessarily know, like, when they had that aha moment or when they realized that the things they were doing and things that they cared about were really feminist-driven. So I think by having those stories in there and seeing things that range from, you know, having always lived that way, always sort of growing up in a very progressive household where feminism was sort of instilled from day one, while also having those essays where people just had an aha moment. There's one Daniel Jose Older talks about, just like it hit him all of a sudden when he was in his 20s, like, oh, you know, I want to do feminist things. I think seeing all those different pathways in is sort of the invitation to any kind of reader who does see it as a rigid idea. Nobody comes to it the same way, and that's okay. There's a great part in DJ Older's piece where he talks about feminism is this big party and everybody's dancing and taking turns doing their thing, but we're all there together. And that's okay. Like, however we got there is okay.
The subtitle of the book, the subtitle being Feminism for the Real World, struck me as interesting in part because I wondered what the not real world would be in this case. You know, is it a fake world? Is it a hypothetical world? Why that title?
That was actually the one piece of the title that stayed from day one. The first part, the here we are, was something else beforehand, and it kind of changed and evolved. But I looked at feminism for the real world as not this philosophical idea of what feminism is, but actually like the lived experience of being in the real world and what it looks like outside of, you know, you see those pictures in your textbooks in high school, like beyond the movements that we learn about in such somewhat static ways in classrooms. This is more of the, okay, I'm applying what I learned to like real world situations and seeing how it plays out in the real world. I like to think that this book is sort of the, you've probably had one of these experiences before, thought these things before, and that's, you know, like feminism is here to talk about those things.
What do we gain from looking at stories that aren't static, that aren't viewed in that kind of historical lens?
I know I connect with things much more when I hear other people's personal experiences. I think this happens a lot with teenagers, too. When you can make a connection with them on a personal level, something just sticks. And I think about There's an essay that really exemplifies this well in the anthology by Nova Runsuma, where she talks about she was in a high school class. It was an honors class for global literature. She got the syllabus and noticed that there was not a single woman that they were reading in that class. And she sat there in high school just fuming. And she said, you know, I didn't know what to do because I knew it was wrong, but also, like, what can I do about this? And she said that, you know, she approached her teacher, which she'd never done before, and he had said something to the effect of, you know, women haven't written great global literature. And it just sent her into a shock that somebody would say that and believe that and teach that sort of thing. And what she did is created her own reading syllabus. She only read women in her free time. And I think that that sort of application of, okay, here are the rules in this classroom, like I can't break out of this confine. She said, okay, well, that doesn't dictate what I do in my personal life. And I can enrich my personal life and show him, you know, to myself that he was wrong about what he said regarding female writers.
When you think about this anthology and you think about all of the people who might receive it, you know, people who might share the kind of misogynistic views that her teacher shared, or people who might be very much on the fence about feminism, who view it as a kind of aggressive and unsubstantial movement, who among them do you hope this anthology reaches, and how do you hope it reaches them?
That's a really good question. I guess I hope that this will open eyes, even if it doesn't necessarily change the minds of people who aren't ready to change their minds, that it at least gives insight into what it is feminists care about and what it is they're aiming to do in their day-to-day life. I don't think that there are any pieces in there that are necessarily aggressive, and I think that that sort of tone, the tone that carries through is this idea of hope and working together. And I would hope that somebody who goes in, you know, ready to be to be unmoved by it, at least sees that this is not about an us versus them. This is very much a personal movement, and here are sort of the reasons why we care so deeply about feminism. I mean, of course, I hope people change their minds when they read it and see that, you know, it's much more a call to action and a call to just sort of having hopefulness in making the world a better place, and far less about, you know, putting people down who, you know, maybe don't understand it or have been turned off because of aggressive experiences in the past.
Kelly Jensen is editor of Here We Are, Feminism for the Real World. Jensen will be in Milwaukee tonight at 7 o'clock at Boswell Books. For more information, head over to wuwm.com.